Hello and welcome to Chatting Fit, the podcast that gives you knowledge and opinions from the world of health, nutrition and more. We're back. It's episode 50. Would you believe it? Now, as I speak to you today, I am reading an article. I know what you're thinking. That's incredibly rude. This man is multitasking while talking to us on a podcast. That's incredibly rude. You're correct, but the article is relevant to today's conversation. And I'm going to read the headline for you now. Researchers suggest the evidence does not support the scientific claims that meat harms human health. Instead, they say meat supplies high-quality protein and various nutrients, some of which are not easily obtained with a meat-free diet. So, ladies and gentlemen, the scientific community sometimes wakes up to the fact that without meat and without animal products in our diet, then we are very much vulnerable to nutrient deficiencies and other health issues. Sometimes people wake up, sometimes they go back to sleep. It's my mission to keep the message going and keep letting people know that they need meat in their diet and they need animal products in their diet to be healthy. Today's guest has moved from polar opposite sides of the dietary scale. He was a vegan for a long time and now he is strict carnivore. What a journey that is. He's had incredible ups and downs as a vegan and he's now reclaiming his health with the carnivore diet. We don't all have to be carnivores, but stories like this show us the power of meat and the healing properties that are often ignored. And it's more important than ever that we're aware of them as more people start to try and drop meat from their diet and claim that the vegan diet is the healthiest diet around. We know from experience that it's not. If you haven't already, and if you have a spare thumb right now, please move that thumb over to the rating area and give this show a 5-star review. And if you've already done it, you are a hero in my eyes. So without further ado, let's hear from today's guest. So James, thank you so much for joining us.
Finley, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here on the Chatting Fit podcast. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you. Could you kick us off by telling us a bit about your background and what you do today?
Sure. Folks can find me on Instagram primarily at the moment as the_carnivorist. And basically, I created that Instagram page because I was an ex-vegan, and we're going to get into that in a minute, who has now transformed his health mentally and physically, because of adding animal foods back in my diet. I also created a YouTube page as well. My daytime job at the moment is a life insurance underwriter, which is kind of interesting given all that I know about the health world these days. The carnivorist, I'm a big advocate of the carnivore diet, which we'll get into as well. And just had an unbelievably amazing health turnaround from changing up my diet and swapping out a few foods in it.
I love it. I mean, because the more I hear from people who are in the carnivore world speaking about their health changes, the more it's like that these are real strong anecdotes that has a lot of meaning in a lot of people's lives. And I just want to hear, like, can you tell us a bit about how you came to be a vegan?
Sure. Just bear with me, folks and listeners of Chatting Fit. It's a little bit of a story, but it's a good one. I was born and raised in the beautiful island of Bermuda, which is where I'm coming from to you today. I grew up sort of on the standard American diet. I was born in 1972. I'm 50 years old. I was a child of the 70s and 80s, right when sort of all that, you know, American dietary guidelines were kicking in full swing and, you know, drop all the butter and add the margarine and all these type of things. And then Pop-Tarts and the cereal generation. I did eat some meat in my younger days, albeit my mother was vegetarian. My father did include some meat, so he would prepare things like burgers for us kids and things like that. I ended up going away to boarding school because my father's Canadian when I was about 15. And I got into sports. I was always a little bit overweight as a kid. I got into sports there. I did crew and basketball. And because when you're in boarding school, you know, your folks aren't feeding you. You have to eat basically what you're given in the meal hall. And at the time, it was really great in Canada. They fed a lot of meats. I ate a lot of stuff that I hadn't eaten before, a lot of different types of meats. And I was quite athletic and actually had been touted to row crew and play basketball for my university. I ended up separating my shoulder, which sort of put a stop to that. In university, I met a young lady who at the time was a vegetarian as well. And very commendable for her, because if you think back in the early 90s, there wasn't a lot of options at the grocery store, you know, pre-packaged options, let's say, for the vegetarian and even vegan diet then. That was even less heard of, Finley. So because we decided we were going to move into together, live together, it was just easier for me. And because the little that I understood, and from her speaking to her, was that this was a healthier way of eating. You're going to drop out the meat, which is full of bad fats and would, you know, all those things sit in your colon and give you cancer. So I became vegetarian / pescatarian. And we'll get into that later because it's an important fact. I kept the fish in because coming from Bermuda, they were very well known to me. You can imagine an island surrounded with beautiful fish. I kept those in, and I kept eggs in as well, which she did. Now, later on, I think that was the reason that held me over, and we can discuss that. I ended up being a vegetarian for literally decades. Fast forward a little bit to when I met my wife, my current wife that I'm married to, and she saw how I was eating. And again, because, you know, living and being married together, I wanted certain things to eat. She is Venezuelan and had eaten meat a lot of her life. Mm-hmm. She decided to investigate a little bit further on the vegan diet. This, you have to understand, this was just when the vegan diet was really coming out. All the propaganda-based films were hitting, the Forks Over Knives, the Game Changers. Mm-hmm.
So what sort of time was this?
This was 2013, 14.
Okay, yeah, I remember it. Yeah, it's sort of those Game Changer documentaries were very, very convincing.
Yes, sir, they sure were. And, you know, looking back on what I know now, and we'll talk later, you know, as we get into the story, I shake my head and think, how could I have fallen for that? But, you know, the truth is, it's so pervasive and intertwined with every fabric of our lives in some way, shape, or form these days, from Greta Thunberg and her environmental mm-hmm. thing that she stood for, to the U.S. dietary guidelines, to when you search Google now about the healthiest diet, up pops the plant-based stuff. Anyway, long story short, we both decided to go vegan. And we committed to it, and we did it for 6 years. And I have to tell you, Finley, for the first couple of years, I felt pretty good. And because prior to that, I had been eating still a lot of processed foods, you know, vegetarian. I was in the working world, still drinking quite a bit, a lot of chips and flours, tortillas and quinoa and beans. And so we eliminated all those, went vegan, and I felt good because I dropped weight. I'm sure eliminating all the processed food and seed oils was a big thing. Mm. And then by the fifth year, I started to notice some changes in my mental and physical health. Things like, the first thing I noticed was the brain fog creeping in. A lot of folks that I speak with talk about the brain fog being one of the first signs where I recall Finley sitting at work and typing and going, why am I sitting here? What am I doing? I can't remember. And then I was taking some exams for my employer, and I was not remembering anything at all, which was not like me. I was always, you know, a really good student.
That's not just brain fog. That sounds like almost Alzheimer's.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then I started to notice my skin drying out. My nails were cracking. My gums were bleeding constantly. And then my hair started to fall out. And then my digestion got really, really bad. I started to get fungal infections, viral infections, severe constipation, to the point where I struggled to go to the bathroom for days at a time. It was very, very painful. I had this bloat going on. The brain fog was hitting. And the worst thing was I was dropping weight. No matter how much I was putting in my mouth, I just could not seem to gain weight. I was really, really scared and afraid. And all this was happening around the time of the pandemic hitting. I was sent away to do a colonoscopy. I ended up that I couldn't do the colonoscopy because my doctor thought that I had ulcerative colitis or colitis of some sort, because they found a severe bacterial infection in there called Shigella, which causes, amongst other things, severe bleeding from your bowels, which I had in abundance. Every time I went to the bathroom, it was bleeding everywhere, hence the potential colitis. I dropped down to 127 pounds of severe emaciated malnutrition. I looked like death walking. I felt like it. I ended up having to go on disability from my job. And then because the pandemic hit, a bunch of us were made redundant and I lost my health insurance and everything. It was a very, very scary time and I didn't know where to turn. And I'll leave it there so you can ask any questions before I go to the next stage.
Yeah, I mean, the question I have in my mind is like, what were the doctors telling you at this stage? Did they not ask you about your diet? And, you know, or presumably, you know, it could have been other things. It could have been like something, I mean, we know now that it wasn't, but it could have been like the bacteria was leaching nutrients and you were just, your body just couldn't cope, or your immune system was crashing, so you were losing weight, or anything in between. What were their thoughts on like why you were losing so much weight, why you were in such bad health?
Great question, Finley. The GP that I was seeing at the time told me that there was no better diet that I could have been on, because you have to understand, up until that time, all my blood markers, my annual physical were pretty good, because, again, I had gotten healthy. She had been with me and seen me get healthy from that processed vegetarian diet where I was overweight, about 220 pounds, but it was just overweight, bloating and not looking good, to going on the vegan diet and all my blood markers and everything improving. So she was like, well, you're on the right track. I've heard that this is the best diet. You should stick on it, continue on it. And so I listened. They ran a gamut of tests on me. They were testing everything from lupus to hepatitis to you name it, to the colitis, and things were coming back negative. Then that struck upon, as I mentioned to you, that bacterial infection, and then a chronic Epstein-Barr, which is mononucleosis in its viral form, that I had obviously from prior years, that was flaring again, severe fatigue. I could hardly get out of bed and ended up practically bedbound, fibromyalgia. My whole body ached constantly to where I couldn't sleep. I probably slept only an hour a night for over a year. It was insane. Very, very difficult and challenging.
So that's the thing. Like, they would be looking at this and being like, oh, well, he's obviously in such poor health because he's got this infection. And then it's like, oh, he's obviously in poor health because he's not sleeping, and he's not sleeping because of this infection. And there was absolutely no postulation that this could have been the food, because you had seen previous success with the change of diet.
Correct. And, you know, unfortunately for me, what had transpired, as we'll talk about, is that I had compromised my gut so severely on the plant-based diet that it had caused the viruses and the bacteria to take hold. I started out with a severe fungal infection, candidiasis, where I had the white tongue, you know, where you see the severe white tongue, which is a sign because it's just a tube that goes down. They had tested my stool and I was severely compromised with candida. And once that takes hold, the whole system is out of whack. Your natural microbiome just gets thrown way off. And I had a real problem there with my digestion.
That's crazy. And presumably at the time, when you're saying like all your blood markers were in great condition, like they were looking at your cholesterol and being like, oh, his cholesterol is really low, so it can't be that. Because they're looking at blood markers when the actual, like, healthy blood markers are wrong in some of the cases. You know, we're looking at very low averages in populations. So we say, oh, the population average is this, you're, you know, doing well for the population, you're actually lower than the population average. So that's great, you know, especially with things like cholesterol.
You hit the nail on the head, Finley. I recall speaking to my GP literally in tears, going, you know, because the brain fog had hit me so severely. And I was like, please, please, something's wrong. She's telling me, but all your markers look good. It could be all in your head. And then the doctor said, well, here's some antidepressants, go away. They basically almost gave up on me at that point. I never ended up taking them, although I was severely depressed and severe anxiety because my mental state had plummeted so much. They were looking at things that, you're correct, on the low LDL, HDL ratio, your cholesterol looks good, your blood markers look good. But what the underlying cause was, I should have had more cholesterol, more building blocks that I needed to bring my testosterone back out. That was the other thing. My libido, my testosterone was almost unmeasurable when they met. And looking back now, that was the reason. I wasn't eating enough protein, good, nutritious, bioavailable protein, or fats to build the blocks that we need to create the proper hormones in us, right?
So what was going through your mind at that point when you were like, I'm doing everything right, my health is crashing? Like, what was going through your mind?
Ben, I have to be honest, I was scared, really, really frightened. I had some very honest to goodness conversations with my wife about I'm not sure if, number one, I can continue on like this mentally and physically, because every day was a severe chore for me just to get out of bed. I continued to lose weight and have the blood in my stool. I knew something was terribly, terribly wrong, and I had to figure a way out. So I started maniacally Googling, you know, because again, remember listeners that I didn't have any health insurance. So I had to figure my own way out, Googling symptoms. And this is the final straw of the vegan, where we can talk about a recent post I made about the escalation of commitment bias, where I came across a physician online who advocated for this smoothie cleanse, where you take a bag of kale, a bag of spinach, a cup of chia seeds, turmeric, blend them up 3 times a day and chug them down. And this would heal you, because it healed her lupus. So I thought, if they're testing for lupus, this might be the shot that I have. And she healed herself. And so I committed to that, and it very nearly killed me. I kid you not. It was awful.
But the thing in my head is that, like, someone's done that before, that exact sort of protocol, and that has healed someone. So, like, what's going on there? You were just so far down the vegan bandwagon that, and you were so emaciated that that was, you know, that was no chance that that was going to benefit you in any way.
Well, I like to think of it, Finley, as where are you coming from to that protocol in your journey? If you're not, and you, again, very wisely said, look at the stage you were in at your life when you started that protocol. If someone younger than myself, healthier, that had a proper digestion and had been eating meat for a lot longer than I had, let's say decided to go plant-based and use that protocol, they may not have had the same experience. But because I was at that stage and hoping and praying it would work and really diligently sticking to, that's the other thing your listeners need to know. I never cheated on the vegan diet for 6 years. Never once. I committed and we ate plant-based whole foods. My wife became a certified plant-based chef. We were so committed to this way of eating, and because we thought this was the best thing for us, the planet and the animals. So I never cheated. So that needs to be said as well. It was just a challenge, and you're absolutely correct. If some folks coming from a different stage might have slightly different results, but I need listeners to understand that no matter, and we can talk about it a little further, no matter what stage you're on, these things will catch up with you in the end. They will.
Absolutely. And I want to go from, so you're almost on death's door. I want to say you've been on the vegan diet now for, I guess, 5.5 years, coming up to 6 years. And you don't have any health insurance, you're chugging plant-based shakes. And what happened then?
As I mentioned, I was surfing the net because literally it was all that I could do, and listening to podcasts. And I came across a presentation by Sally K. Norton, who your listeners may or may not know is an expert in oxalates, unbelievable lady. And I really credit her with transforming and changing and saving my life. Her presentation on YouTube was called Lost Seasonality and the Overconsumption of Plants. And I watched it, and I watched it again. And then I watched it a third time. And I said, this, even in my brain fog mind that I had, I said, oh, okay, she's starting to make a little sense here. Essentially what she talks about is we have bred plants to be eaten now out of their seasonality, out of their season. They're everywhere now. All these plants are in the grocery stores. They're in our dietary guidelines. Whereas before, our ancestrally, we used to eat them sparingly and also medicinally, as opposed to just having them part of our plates all the time. And a lot of these plants, most of these plants contain toxins, specifically one called oxalate. And as I researched, I found out that primarily what I had been eating on the vegan diet were all the highest oxalate foods. And oxalates turn into crystals, little micro shards called rhabdoids in your body once you consume them. And I had literally ripped my inside, my digestion, to pieces. And once that happens, you're affected not only on a mitochondrial level, an enzymatic level, but also primarily your digestion, because that's how they are eventually expelled through your stool, through your urine, think kidney stones. And you can sweat them out too. It's a little bit more challenging a process, but that changed everything for me.
Can you give us an example of some high oxalate foods?
Sure. Some of my old favorites, Finley. I tell you, things like sweet potatoes. I mentioned chia seeds, spinach, which seems to be everybody's little health love child these days. And very importantly, almonds, and specifically almond milk, because people don't realize pretty much all the nuts, save a few ones like water chestnuts, which are really not, and macadamias are lower, but all the nuts tend to be very high, seeds and grains. But when you blend these nut milks, which I chugged gallons of on the vegan diet, it makes these oxalates, more bioavailable. And I was putting those in my smoothies, in my cereal, in our recipes, everything, because we thought, hey, we're saving the planet. The cows don't have to suffer. But they're so bad for you. And people are just cramming this stuff down. So as I mentioned, chocolate, Swiss chard, beets, beet tops, almonds, specifically star fruit, which we don't eat a lot of here in the Western world. And sorrel's another one, but that's more, again, Eastern tradition. But those are some big ones.
Yeah, I'm basically, you could put all those vegetables and nuts in my diet like a year ago. And, you know, I was a big sweet potato guy. I mean, I still do have sweet potato occasionally. Big spinach guy. I used to have it be like, I need a bag of spinach a day. And, you know, like, and the more this stuff is being revealed, because there's sort of a top line nutrition narrative, which is like, even balance, you know, which I'm starting to move away from balance now, like the balance of having some processed food, having some vegetables, having some meat, having some, you know, like, that premise of you're basically adding stuff in that's unnecessary and calling it a balanced diet. And so like there's some really strong nutrition narratives that need to be sort of unpicked. But I just want to go back to that almost cognitive dissonance, but whereby you're in such an emaciated state, you're being told by doctors that your food is good. You're finding stuff online telling you that your food is good. And we're going to come back to, you know, you've just started seeing that the stuff from Sally Norton. But you made a post the other day about, you know, commitment bias. You're so all in on this vegan diet. And you're like, it can't possibly be the vegan diet. Like, if I know one thing is correct, it's that the vegan diet is healthy.
This is it. That was a really powerful moment for me. Realizing and researching and coming across that escalation of commitment bias that you just talked about. I did a recent interview with Dr. Sean Baker, who I'll talk to you in a minute about, how he also was a big key for my healing, in which I talked about exactly what you said. I said I doubled down on the vegan diet because I thought, okay, it's the healthiest thing that I've researched. Therefore, if I go at it even harder, it will quote unquote detox me from whatever's ailing me. And it couldn't be further from the truth. You know, it's that old adage, success, as you say, is just around the corner, just a few more smoothies and I'll be right as rain. Meanwhile, it's nearly killing me. There's a famous quote, which I often say, and please excuse me, listeners, if you've heard me say it before, is that if you're sitting on a nail, don't take an aspirin for the pain, just get off the nail. And I finally got up off that nail, Finley.
It's amazing. So after you'd seen the, what was your thoughts when you were hearing this stuff that Sally Norton was saying about, you know, seasonality and having too many plants on the plate?
It just clicked with me for whatever reason. And I thank the good Lord above that I found that presentation that day, because Sally comes at it with such an approach, and similar to Chatting Fit podcast and yourself, Finley, where there's an open mind to things and there's not a dogma that's associated with the way she thinks. And the same with Dr. Baker, which is why I gravitated towards him. Dr. Baker, in his essence, is very, very open to doing whatever works best for you. And I appreciated her approach. And then I found a mutual friend of ours, Scott Neslinski from Carnivore Cast, and I found Sally's presentation there, which led me to Dr. Baker on Joe Rogan's podcast, and where he was talking about I'd heard Sally say that animal foods are the lowest in oxalate. They literally almost have none. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to go for that, the will to live is so strong. When you're faced with the prospect of not being around much longer, the will to live, you've got to do something, right? You got to do something. So I thought, I am going to get rid of all plants and go fully carnivorous. And it was a challenge at first. It was.
Was that like an overnight switch, or what was the actual transition like?
It was, I would like to call it, baby steps into the abyss for me.
Or into the promised lands by the sound of it.
Yeah, but you have to remember, I was still thinking of, here's an interesting thing that I thought of the other day, Finley, which is good for your listeners. I used to walk into the grocery store and think the produce aisle was life and the meat section was death. I've completely flipped that on my head now these days. I go right past all those greens and produce and go straight to the meat section, which is sustaining me and made me healthier than I've ever been pretty much in my life. It's unbelievable. So I say that all to say is I went very timidly because I knew my digestion was so compromised. Anything I put in my mouth, I had a lot of reactions to. I had even reactions to benign things like chicken. I would get the brain fog immediately, like butter, dairy, anything that I was putting in there. So I had to tread very slowly but surely, I started moving more of my plates, almost a ketogenic approach. And once I realized that I was starting to feel better, then I went really gung-ho.
And what was that first? Because you mentioned you went pescatarian first, or you started to, the first thing you introduced was fish, right?
Yes, sir.
So what was that first bite like? Did you feel guilty?
I did. I really did initially. It was very hard. That dissonance from being a vegan and thinking that sort of really rigid way, was tough. It was tough. The reason that I chose fish is exactly right, because I had been a pescatarian, so it was what was most known to me, and I thought at the time to my digestion. And I was right. It was a piece of salmon, and I will never forget the day. I was feeling so bad. I grilled it up and I said, oh, here we go. I remember saying to myself, here we go, James, this is it. And I took a few bites and it was a struggle at first, but then I started, oh man, I forgot how delicious this was. And I kid you not, Finley, a few hours later, it wasn't immediate, but a few hours later, I felt a little bit of a shift, a little bit of that brain fog, not all the fibromyalgia, not all that stuff lifted, but that brain fog, just to have that instant glimmer that there was a light at the end of that tunnel, was game changing for me.
Yeah, I bet. What was your, because presumably your wife was still like a plant-based chef, and like, was her career in plant-based cooking? So yes. Like, was she resistant to this as well? Or was she just grateful that you were trying something else to move on? Like, what was, because there must have been a clash there.
This is a great opportunity, Finley, to answer an awesome question. Thank you for asking it. And I just wanted to talk to the listeners about, not only I mentioned some of the physical symptoms of the end stage veganism there, but the mental ones too, because it gets talked about, but not nearly enough as people's physical symptoms. And I had severe physical symptoms, but my mental symptoms were also pretty severe. I had been depressed and anxious, and in an honest moment for your listeners, not very much fun to be around for a year and a bit. It was a struggle for her. It was a struggle for me and our marriage. She was so supportive during that time. And I think she was just happy, Finley, that I was trying something, anything to get out of this near-death experience that I had been in, and was very supportive. Now, she hadn't had a lot of the same experience as I did, because again, she was coming at it from a different tale, a different background dietarily than me. So she found a lot of benefit initially. And we can talk about some of the things that have changed since she has now is eating more carnivorously. She's also pivoted her business, by the way, to include animal foods again, which I get asked on. But yeah, she's very supportive.
That's great. And presumably, how long had she been vegan at this when you started to experience all of these health issues? Were you vegan the whole time together?
Yeah, we started at the exact same time.
Okay. So why wasn't she getting these same sort of levels of health issues as you at that stage?
It's just to what I was saying earlier, is that her family is originally from Venezuela, and then from the United States. They moved there when she was very young. She had eaten a lot more animal foods in her dietary past than I had.
Because you had been vegetarian before.
Correct.
That.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so you were depleted on this stuff way before.
Way before. And that ties in back to what I said early on in the beginning. Great point, Finley, in that I think those years of vegetarianism with the little fish and the eggs that I was eating honestly held me over from that precipitous cliff that I fell off on the vegan diet for many years. I think it kind of kept me there, but it also forced me to eat a lot of other processed garbage, which deteriorated my health too.
Well, that's the thing, because, you know, I know you're familiar with her work as well, Belinda Fetke. And she talks about the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and she talks about, you know, the sort of the long reaching hands into our nutrition advice. And, you know, the very fact that people talk about these blue zones, and they talk about the Seventh-day Loma Linda, and where these people are having a high plant-based diet and they're incredibly healthy. And, you know, that may well be the case, that they are reasonably healthy, but they always miss out the fact that they don't actually eliminate all animal products. They still have chicken, they still have beef, they still have animal fats in the diet once a week, four times a month or so. Like, the definitions of vegan is having meat, I think, once a month. The definition of vegetarian is having meat or fish once a week. Like, it's not an elimination diet. So there is a leveraging of still having animal products, but we think of vegan as an absolute removal of all animal-based products, like even eggs, even cheese, even any of this, not just meat, but anything based on animals. So there is a leveraging within the communities that are still having these great health benefits.
Absolutely right. I mean, I don't, you know, I think it's Dan Buettner who was the person that came up with the Blue Zone study. And, you know, so many folks, in fact, we were talking offline about Jane Buxton's book, The Great Plant-Based Con. She discusses the debunking of these Blue Zones a little bit. And it's sad, the reach that these folks have had now and how pervasive it gets to. And when you start going down these rabbit holes, as I did, once I started going down all these podcasts like you, Finley, my mind is just going, holy cow, literally all puns intended.
That's good. That's good.
What has happened? What has happened to us as humans? It's incredible. And folks should go back and listen to Finley's podcast with Dr. Bill Schindler. That was an excellent one. He is such an incredible guy. He's great. Really talks about how we evolved as humans. And yeah, you know, we did eat some plants, but it was ultimately our access to animal nutrition that helped our brains to grow, wasn't it?
Well, this is the thing. Like, I started this podcast as a very general podcast, you know, general health, fitness, nutrition podcast. And as I've done it, and as I've spoken to more people, like, there is a curtain lifting for me, and my audience may be able to hear the curtain lifting as each episode progresses, because I'm still trying to go, like, my brain is still like, vegetables have to be healthy. Like, it's in my mind, it's like, vegetables have to be healthy, like, shouting at me. And I'm like, but all of the evidence is suggesting, and all of the things are indicating, hang on, like, in the last 150, 200 years, we've changed our diet hugely, even, like, you know, 10,000 years ago with the advent of agriculture. And okay, we can argue about different pockets of the world, but the most commonly available thing was us hunting animals, and we were always seeking that. And you go to communities in far off reaches in corners of the earth, and people are saying, like, oh, we love meat, we crave meat. There's no way evolutionarily we would be in a situation where our bodies would crave something apart from sugar, that's the caveat, but where our bodies would crave something that is making us drastically ill. We wouldn't go gravitate to a vegan diet, like, naturally. Like, there's just no way.
Completely 100% agree with you, and well said, Finley. You know, looking back on my time, it just, everything, as you so succinctly stated, you know, when I started to do the research and started to realize how we evolved, how societies have evolved, the eating animal products, whether it was dairy, you know, the nose to tail nutrition in various parts of the world, even the blood, as we talked about, as Dr. Bill talks about, it's just crazy. And when people ask me, you know, I had a gentleman message me recently, you know, I want to make sure that folks understand that my approach is not from a place of dogma, because the vegan area, having just talked to you about it, can be filled with that very, and you see some of the crazy, I was never one of the crazy vegans attacking people online and going into grocery stores and dumping out all the milk. I just felt that it was the right thing to do based on what I had read and posted on my social media about it. But I'm not one that says you have to eliminate all plants. I have found through my own experimentation that I don't think that I'll ever go back. Plus, I tell people that I ate enough plants as a vegan that I, for the rest of my life, I'm good. I'm catching up on my animal nutrition now. Honestly, my digestion has never been better than it, and never. And that's one thing some people ask me about is, well, how's your digestion? Aren't you constipated like you were, or even worse? I'm like, no, it's never been better. Mm-hmm. Your body just assimilates and uses these nutrients so readily, doesn't it? It's incredible.
That's the thing. I think that there's a whole thing around the meat and nutrient density and eggs and anything that is based on animal products that just syncs up so well with what we need as humans on a nutrient level. And I always want to make the caveat to many people, like, there are many people thriving who still eat plants. who still eat vegetables. And there is an amount of resilience and amount of adaptation that's gone on in the gut and the microbiome and everything that allows them to still eat plants as well as animal products. Like there is a balance there. And I think, you know, once people start understanding about oxalates and other plant toxins, that's where it becomes a little bit more different. But it is clear that people can still have plants in their diet and thrive and do well. But the whole point is that when you get to a point where you're so depleted and you have eliminated all animal products, there is really only one direction to start to claw back your health. And that is either through, you know, reintegrating meat in the diet and reducing the plants. So can you tell us again about that, a bit more about that transition, and like maybe going, like, what did the doctors have to say about this? Because presumably they're like, this is a miracle.
Do you know, Finley, in an honest moment, I haven't been back. I haven't been back to see. Wow. That I actually ended up firing all anybody I had prior, not out of spite or malice or anything. Mm-hmm. I just wanted a whole new start. I felt like a human pincushion for 3 years, the amount of blood I had drawn and tests I had done. So if I don't have to darken a physician's door in the next little while, so much of what Dr. Baker talks about too, and I'll get into the transition in a second, is that, you know, ultimately we're looking at so many markers these days. And the most important one is how you feel. How are you feeling? People come to me, oh, I'm not feeling this way, you know, or I'm worried because I have high LDL. My doctor said I shouldn't be eating meat. Well, I ask them, well, how are you feeling? Are you feeling great? Are you out exercising? Are you enjoying life, thriving? And they're like, well, yeah. I'm like, well, don't be overly concerned. You know, obviously I'm not telling you not to listen to your doctor, but there is other information out there, and just research yourself. As far as the transition went, I had struggles because one of the things that the vegan diet does to you is it stops the production of stomach acid, because you don't have the high dense animal foods in there to break down. So my stomach acid, we tested that, by the way, in my last couple of tests with my GP, was very, very low, hypochlorhydria, whatever it's called. And then it also stops producing the enzymes as well, similar to how we lose sometimes the ability to break down lactose over the years as humans. But you can lose the ability. The pancreas goes, well, you're not putting in any of these animal products anymore, I'll just stop producing. So I had to supplement. I had to go very slowly. I was struggling with the fat. So I went from one extreme to the other, the severe constipation, to the other side, the diarrhea. Mm-hmm. It took me a good 6 months. Now, transition over to a carnivorous diet usually only takes people that are coming from a relatively, let's say, keto position, or have included animal foods, usually about 3 to 4 weeks tops. Mine was 6 months. So it was a very testing journey. I experimented a lot. I added supplements. Just this past month, I've managed to go off the betaine HCL tablets completely. And then next month, I'm trying the enzymes to see how it goes. Success. Okay. So it's good.
Wow. And so in terms of like lasting health issues, what's been the sort of carryover?
Yeah, great question. So let me talk about the amazing successes. First of all, as you mentioned, I felt the brain fog lift. That was one of the first things, which was great for me. Then the severe body aches and pains left me, which meant I could actually get up out of bed and feel like I could accomplish something during the day. I started to put on weight. My digestion improved, albeit, you know, it had switched the other way. I knew that the candida infection left. I could tell by my color of my tongue. My skin stopped cracking. My nails and hair started growing again. It was just remarkable, sort of the turnaround that happened. The anxiety, the depression left within about a month and a half, 2 months, the anxiety another month or a bit after that. I think it was because I was still really nervous about everything, and I didn't have insurance and but things that are left over. Learning what I have now, Finley, about oxalates and how they're stored and then subsequently released in the body, it's a very laborious process for our bodies to go through. Once you have ingested the amount I have and some other folks have, it can literally take years. Sally herself is on her ninth year.
Well, I mean, maybe tell us about that, because I know Sally had her book coming out, which is Toxic Superfoods. And a lot of people reading that, and that's on my reading list. But maybe you can tell us about, like, you've told us a little bit about what oxalates are, but about the dumping process and, like, you know, clearing this from the body.
Yeah, it's a really important subject. So essentially what happens, and again, Sally's the expert, and great recommendation on her book, fabulous. I read it and recently interviewed her myself. The body tends to want to store these plant-based weapons, which they are, they're weapons for plants, and little crystals, tiny crystals in the body, because the excretion process is so difficult. Because if you can imagine little barbs and shards going into your system constantly, like a barrage, so they end up in old injury spots, in tissues, in fascia, in your fat, adipose, in your brain, and they're stored there because the body's trying to save you from this onslaught of the battle. It's basically sequestering all these things to be hopefully released when you're more healthy at a later date. And what happens on the carnivore diet is your body goes, hallelujah, the bombing has stopped. We can start dumping these things out. And it's a very painful and can be dangerous process, which I found out. I had most carnivores have what they call as the honeymoon period, where they go through and you feel so incredible because you have come from this plant-based background, if you're switching like I did. And then usually about a month, two, maybe three into it, it hits you like a brick, like you've been hit by a bus. You just feel all those same symptoms coming back and you go, oh no, this is a problem. The aching, the body aches, the fibromyalgia, the headaches, they all start coming back. And what it is, it's the body expelling them. And how you can tell this, thank you, Sally, again, is your urine starts to get cloudy. You get a lot of tartar buildup on your teeth. That's another way it can come out, which I went to my dentist recently and they're like, oh man, what's all this tartar from? And
I say, you start smoking.
Yeah, exactly. But it really, those are the sort of the signs you can do. Your urine gets very cloudy and smelly. The body aches come back. And the good thing, if there is a good thing, is that they tend to go in waves, these peaks and valleys, the dumping symptoms. You can excrete the oxalates through your stool as well, and you can sweat them out. So it'll last maybe a week, 10 days, and then you'll get to the proverbial oasis in the desert.
And you feel, Sally North presumably has lots of case studies of people who have got to the end of that oxalate dumping, and then what's been do they feel much better day to day?
You know, that's a great question, Philly. I'm not sure. You mean the very end where there's none after?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A great question. I like to ask her that. Mostly we talk about the folks in the space who are feeling it now. As I mentioned earlier, Sally herself is in her ninth year, and she said she only gets it very, very rarely now. So using herself as a case study, she says the first couple of years on the carnivore diet are the worst because your body's going, okay, time to push this out. And then she says it improves exponentially every year after that. And she's in her ninth and very rarely gets symptoms these days. One thing that is left over for me, Finley, is tinnitus, the ear ringing, which so many folks suffer from. And that's because I'm imagining because of my brain fog anxiety, and I ended up with a lot of stuff up there and in my ear canal. She says it can be a symptom of that. And when the dumps come, the ear ringing gets worse.
It's interesting you say that, because I think I'm a very sensitive, I think many people are very sensitive bodies. And I think a lot more things we're sort of allergic to or intolerant to than we know. And we just get used to a baseline level of sort of malaise. And I remember eating things like bread or pasta. And then in the following days, I would get tinnitus. Like I would get ringing. And if I smoked, I used to smoke, you know, when I went and partied and stuff, you know, the weekends and stuff, and I would get tinnitus in the days after that. And it's whether it's a swelling or whether it's just your body is inflamed or something, accumulation of toxins, like there are these small indicators that your body is not happy that we don't necessarily associate with food. You know, we associate like an intolerance or something related to food to stomach pain or to like rashes on the skin. But there are so many different small things like nuanced headaches. We just put headaches down. I've been staring at the screen too long. There are many, many indicators that we have intolerances that we don't necessarily associate.
Excellent point. I interviewed a lady by the name of Jeannie DeAngelis, who's also otherwise known as the Low Ox Grandma on Instagram. Folks should look her up. She's an incredible guest and I highly recommend her. Jeannie, her what she had happened to her because of oxalates is unbelievable. She went through the ringer and then some. And I don't like to say that everything is oxalates because it's clearly not. But for her, she has a famous saying where she says, you know, I don't like to blame everything on oxalates. But when I did the research, it was because of oxalates that everything happened to me. because these things affect us on a mitochondrial level, as I mentioned before, which they have now found, they're so small and so tiny, they get into our mitochondria, which are energy producers in our cells. It is a cascading effect. So once our mitochondria are malfunctioning, everything happens. So they can get into the inner ear canal, affect your brain, as I mentioned earlier. So these simple things, Finley, these simple things, swapping out a few options on your plate can make profound changes in our health. It's incredible.
Exactly. Exactly. And can you keep telling us a little bit more about, so you've about the continuation of your story, and you've got rid of a lot of the mental issues. So when did you start seeing your sort of physical health improving?
Yeah, it was a, because I was coming in such a malnourished state to the carnivore diet, and as you find out, and when you start adding animal foods back in, they're so satiating. I mean, literally, you get full. I used to be hungry all the time on the vegan diet. I was stuffing my face. And after I finished eating, even though my belly was bloated from all the beans, lentils, and quinoa, I was still hungry. So I'd go back to the fridge looking for snacks. When you eat animal foods and high nutrient dense animal meat, you get full so quickly. And I wasn't used to that feeling. So I stopped. So one of the things I'm committed to and want to have happen is for me to put on a healthy weight again from 127 pounds. I'm back up now to 170 plus.
Oh, wow. And it's 50 pounds.
And it's muscle mostly. Like my waist size has only gone up a bit, but my upper body, my chest, my arms have grown crazy. It's so easy to put on muscle with this way of eating. So I say that all to say is that I had to include eat more often. So as Dr. Baker often says, you have to eat like it's your job when you're on the carnivore diet, because you can get full so quickly, especially if you're coming from a malnourished state. Now, if you're coming from an overweight state, it can be beneficial, but you have to think long term. One of the things we talk about as a coach, and I forgot to mention, I got recently certified as a carnivore coach through Rivero, Dr. Baker's Congrats. Program. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going for the fasting designation next that he offers. So I want to really help folks with that end. Is that you have to sort of flip the way of thinking on its head. You have to eat healthy to lose weight rather than losing weight to get healthy. That's what you have to think about. And it's a really powerful statement. And so for me, yeah, it was just making sure I was eating enough. And then as I started to put on the weight, as I started to add in things like, we can talk about the other lifestyle levers, grounding, I included sauna to help with the oxalate detox, ice baths. These things really helped and immeasurably gained my health back.
This is the interesting thing, that once that cascade happens, the sort of whole world of actual health is revealed. You start eating animal-based, you realize nutrient density, you start realizing the connection of our bodies with the sun, you start realizing that we need cold and heat exposure, you start realizing that, all of this stuff starts to unfold, and then you start looking back at, hang on, the medical world is so fucked. I heard there's a vegan doctor, and he's a digestive doctor, and I'm not going to name him outright. But a gastroenterologist. And again, I'm always looking at, what do we all agree on? And his first level is removing processed foods. And I'm like, great, we definitely all agree on that. And then his next level is lifestyle. Can you start exercising more? And then the part where it really diverges is when he says, drop all animal products because they cause cancer. And that's, and he's talking
so close.
Exactly. So close. He was so close. And then he starts saying, when his patients come in and they have digestive issues and stuff, and he tells them to remove the meat and remove the processed foods. And then if that doesn't cure their digestive issues, then he starts medicating. And I go, there's real cognitive dissonance there, that we're animals, we're meant to work properly. We're meant to that there's a way that our body works. We've evolved for millions of years to work. We don't just need new modern medications to help our body work. That's just not how it works. So and he's saying how wonderful these medications are, which I've no doubt that there's been millions of pounds of research go in there, or billions of pounds of research go in there, and the chemists behind them are fantastic people. But our body does not need this stuff. 99% of people do not need digestive medications. We need to eat the right food.
That That is an unbelievably well said little statement there, Finley. And I look at now, here's a prime example. I look at my folks who are coming up on their 80th years in this planet, and I watch them as how their health is declining, which can happen with age. But through my folks who have not made any adjustments in their diets since the time they were young children, and how the now medical paradigm is just pushing more and more pills on them. Every time I go to visit with them, there's another pill pack there of things they should be taking. And I'm like, Mom, Dad, what is this? Oh, this is for my high blood pressure. This is for our cholesterol. I'm like, oh my goodness. I keep telling, but there is so much belief in this medical system, especially for the baby boomer generation. I'm so pleased, as you say, to see folks finally breaking through. I think when we look at COVID and how it was handled, yes, it was an awful time for many, many of us, but it was at a time where an awakening has taken place. You know, there is a revolution going on now, and it's going to be very difficult to stop this wave because the truth is coming out, and you're seeing the doctors themselves, like Dr. Baker, Dr. Chafee, and those folks now who are saying, we've been doing this all incorrectly, folks. And, you know, it's really going to be an incredible time over the next decade or so.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You must have you had your fair share of vegans shouting at you, telling you you're wrong or you're lying?
You know, first, I was kind of a little disappointed at first when I came out as an ex-vegan and I didn't get any. More recently, though, however, they, of course, have found me. And
yeah, you got to get bigger. Now you're getting bigger. So people are, you know, people are with their pitchforks.
Yeah, they've come after me. And I treat everyone the same with kindness. I don't engage that type of stuff and just say, I'm just coming at you from my experience. It's like I said before, I want you to understand that this is what helped heal me and improve my life immeasurably. And if you are suffering on any level, which I can only imagine that you must be if you're vegan and have been for an extended period of time, I will always be here to help. So you can come back, you can attack me, but I'm not going to pay any attention because I'm living my best life right now, my man, and I'm good.
Yeah, I'm the one without depression and anxiety now. Yeah. So
I'm finding joy in everything.
It's amazing. And so, like, because I've heard there's sort of a timeline touted with veganism, you know, whereby you've got the first year or 2 years whereby you're in that honeymoon phase, you've got rid of all the processed foods and all the junk as well, so you're benefiting from that. And then when do the nutrient deficiencies start to sort of take hold? Do you know anything around the sort of timeline that most vegans go through?
Well, if you're like myself and did it very, very strictly, I mean, I even was I even supplemented because I knew of the B12 deficiencies and things that, you know, and also the protein deficiency that can crop up because protein on the vegan diet is hard to come by and it's not very bioavailable when they talk about plant-based protein, as we know. So I did supplement with, but they were also vegan supplements, right? I just had to do it that way, of course. But it depends on, and you very wisely put it, how people approach the vegan diet. Are they very strict? If so, those deficiencies will come a lot sooner. Interestingly enough, one of the tests I did, Finley, was a micronutrient test when I was severely ill and getting severely ill, and it just lit up like a Christmas tree. And for those who have never heard of it, SpectraCell does a micronutrient test where it measures your B vitamins, your Krebs cycle nutrients, zinc, magnesium, and it was negligible on all levels, especially my B vitamins were in the toilet. So, and that was in the beginning of the fifth year. So I thought, well, I'll just supplement more or eat more plant foods that have these nutrients in them. Of course, it doesn't work. But you also mentioned that some veganism can be defined as having animal products every so often. So it depends on that too, I think. But typically what I'm finding with speaking to a lot of ex-vegans is it's by that fifth year, if you do it strictly, that things start to really go off. And you see it too on all the videos online.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd had heard that about 5 years was the lifespan of, well, not the lifespan of a vegan, that suggests that they're all dying, but, you know, I guess if they stayed on the diet, they probably would. But, you know, the sort of life cycle of the vegan diet is around 5 years. That's where you sort of get to the peak of all of your nutrient deficiencies and you just really can't sustain yourself without animal products at that stage.
Yeah, I assume most folks that are listening to this probably on YouTube may or may not have heard of Sverige. I don't know if you heard of Sverige, and
I've never heard of it. No.
He had some YouTube videos up that are still up there, a few of them, Finley, and you can search for them, called Vegans, the Epitome of Malnutrition. And what he did was he had people submit the before and after of so many folks when before they were vegan and went vegan, and snippets of them online where they almost sound like they're talking crazily because of their severe malnutrition. It's really scary to watch. And when I look at the picture of me before, I could have very easily been on those.
Yeah, I've seen that. You look like you're out of a camp in the 1940s. Like,
oh.
I mean, it's bad. It's bad.
And that wasn't even the worst. Your listeners should know I was so depressed and so anxious and so ashamed of the way I looked. I didn't want many pictures taken. And my wife took that picture of me even before the very final stage. And even then, my waist size had gone down to, at that point, I think I was a 27, 26 inch waist. I was wearing little kids' underwear. And
wow.
135 pounds in that photo. So it was terrible.
It's madness. And you know, we talked a little bit around losing trust for even the research industry, because so much of these industry funded studies and stuff is so polluted with mm-hmm. conflicts of interest. I mean, I'm Googling right now. I just typed in before, I said, is the vegan diet healthy? And the mm-hmm. first thing that comes up is, a vegan diet can be healthy as it is typically higher in fiber and lower in cholesterol than an omnivorous diet. As a result, some studies find a vegan diet lowers the risk of heart disease and premature death, helps manage type 2 diabetes, and reduces the risk of cancer. I mean, how are people meant to decipher this? Most people do a Google page, first page, and see what the results are. Like, how are people meant to get around this? Like, there's so many conflicts of interest out there, and people are seeing, like, those two big health things they're seeing there is that high fiber is good and low cholesterol is good. Like, we're in opposite world.
It was on, I don't know if you ever watched Seinfeld, but it was called Bizarro World. They did an opposite, it's called the Bizarro World. Finley, I have so much umbrage with that paragraph right now. It's unbelievable because everything can be flipped on its head with science, with what you just researched, including the type 2 diabetes. We now know that diabetics and type 2 diabetics are, you know, because of the ketogenic aspects in it, are healing primarily on going on a carnivorous diet. And it's because of the plant-based high sugar fruit stuff that is keeping people locked into this high blood sugar. Oh man, and don't get me started on the cholesterol. We could be here all day.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. So many people have commented on some of my stuff that I've posted saying that meat causes diabetes. And I'm there just like, how? I can't even reply to some of these comments because they are just so out there that it just drains you of energy to have to go through like basic science of insulin and like, it's just the levels of lack of knowledge out there are mad.
Do you know the history? And very quickly, Finley, I researched this when I became a carnivore because I was concerned that I would be constipated as a carnivore. Do you know how the whole fiber situation came about?
No, I don't.
I learned this from Dr. Ken Berry. Dr. Ken Berry has a YouTube thing where he talks about there was a researcher called Dennis Burkitt, I believe, who back in the 30s or 40s traveled to Africa to look at indigenous populations, and he observed this particular tribe eating a lot of fibrous foods, and they had massive bowel movements, massive. So he basically took his research back, and I think it was to the UK, I believe, and he hypothesized that fiber must be essential for the diet because of these massive bowel movements that these indigenous tribes were having. And then it infiltrated everything from there on out. Dennis Burkitt, I believe, was his name. But I made a post on it, Fiber and the Carnivore Diet, on my Instagram page where I talk about it.
It's madness. I mean, you can look at it through the other lens and go, hang on, the body's just desperately trying to get rid of stuff there.
this is it. We're just cramming stuff down. And I mean, you talking to Dr. Chafee, how our digestive tract has evolved over the years. You look at a gorilla's digestive tract who's munching on plants all day and has that huge, you know, small intestine and then a large intestine. And we've actually shrunk, you know, our cecum got smaller, our small intestine formed. It's because we shouldn't be eating that massive quantity of fiber to break down. So it's all you said, bizarro world.
It's madness. It's madness. But James, look, this is fascinating. We could talk all day on this, I'm sure. But
yes,
can you give us a quick summary about, you know, where people can find you, what they can expect to see in the future, maybe who you've got coming in your podcast?
Sure. So folks, as I mentioned earlier, you can find me on Instagram at @the_carnivorist and the same for my YouTube channel. I run a weekly little live session on Instagram where I interview folks, not only telling their success and healing story from adding animal foods back in their diet, but some thought leaders as well. I've had Sally Norton on. I have Dr. Bill Schindler coming on tomorrow. So that's going to be great. I have a few surprise ones coming up for next month, which I'm really excited about. I'll leave a hint in that I talked about the book. So that author of the book I talked about in this podcast with Finley is coming next month. I'm very excited about that. And and in addition, you can find me on Dr. Sean Baker's Rivero community, where I'm a carnivore coach currently. And I encourage anyone that is looking for community aspect and support to join the Rivero community. There are a great bunch of folks on there, including Dr. Baker's daily meeting. And yeah, continue to log on and listen to Finley's Chatting Fit podcast. It's been an absolute honor, my friend, and I'm looking forward to hosting you on my own one soon, too.
I'm looking forward to it. James, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to speaking again in the future.
Finley, thanks again. Take care, my friend.
Thank you so much for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure having you along for this latest episode. If you enjoyed the chat, please do click the review button. Give us 5 stars, give us a rating, give us a review. That really helps the show to grow. Send this episode to a friend who you think might benefit from it, or you think might find some of the information really interesting. We will be here every week, releasing on a Thursday, so look out for the next episode, and I hope you have a fantastic week and weekend.